It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kend.
And I'm Rob Ferret. If you've visited Jurassic Park, taken on a Mission Impossible, or hung out with Spider-Man, there's something you may not know. The path to those movie franchises and a lot of other films started here in Wisconsin, in Pewaukee.
Hollywood screenwriter David Koepp grew up there and went to college at UW-Madison. This year, he's breaking out the dinosaurs again with Jurassic World Rebirth.
Koepp has been writing Hollywood blockbusters since the 90s and is one of the most successful screenwriters in the business. His credits include the first two Jurassic Park movies, the first Mission Impossible, and many more. He joins us to talk about movies and Wisconsin. David, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Oh, well, it's a delight to be here. Thank you.
Well, you've had an amazing Hollywood career. I want to bring things home to Pewaukee, Wisconsin. If you were writing the screenplay for the David Koepp story, what would we see in Pewaukee and then at UW that would point you toward your career?
A pretty terrific childhood in Pewaukee. Pewaukee's a small town, even now, at the time, even smaller. I grew up there in the 60s and 70s, late 60s and 70s. I grew up on the lake, which was pretty delightful. And I don't know what would point me to my career. I don't know. I didn't think I was from a very interesting place at the time, because I don't think anyone does. But looking back, there was a great deal of freedom and room to explore. And that emboldens a person, I would think. And Madison, where I went to college for the first few years before transferring to film school, I just got a chance to continue exploring things. And I was very interested in acting and playwriting, directing plays. And it was from there, my playwriting professor at Madison, Edward Amore, encouraged me to go off to film school. He said, if that's really what you want to do, and it was emerging that it was, you should go west or east. I think you can learn a lot about movies here, but they make them there, so go where they make them.
What was it that first made you think this was, in fact, what you really wanted to do?
I was thinking, it's hard to point to moments. Growing up, I know that I loved movies. They were valued in our house. My mother was always encouraging me to watch movies with her. I remember her telling me I could stay up till midnight one night because the 10 o'clock movie was notorious, the Hitchcock movie. And I think I was like 9 years old and had school the next day. So I thought, well, this is pretty terrific. And I had always written stories. And I think probably if I had to point to an era, it would be like 81. I would have been 18. And I remember seeing Raiders of the Lost Ark in a movie theater and thinking, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen in my life. And somebody made it up. I just had a real tangible sense that someone had made up that story. And I was less concerned with the director, who looked like had to go to some very uncomfortable places and stand around in the desert, than with the writer, who I imagined just sitting around dreaming that up. And that seemed like a pretty cool life.
Now, there's so many scripts we could talk about, and maybe we will, the Jurassic Parks and Mission Impossibles. I want to start with one that actually never got made into a movie. It's on your website, four different versions. The Superconducting Supercollider of Sparkle Creek, Wisconsin. And you say this is one of your favorite scripts that has never been made. Tell us about this one movie that, if it ever got made, would be set here in Wisconsin.
Well, this is an idea that my friend John Camps and I, I went to high school with him. He also was graduated from Madison. And he's, we've written several movies together. This was an idea we had probably 25 years ago. We were reading a lot about superconducting supercolliders, which were just coming online back then. There was one in Brookhaven, New York, and there had been plans to build one in Texas that the local town had sort of killed because they had a lot. They were afraid. Basically, they were afraid that if these physicists put this big hole in the ground and fire it up, it's going to rocket us all off into the ninth dimension. And we thought, can you imagine what the town hall meetings were like where they were trying to get that through? And it seemed very funny to us. And the mix of small town America with, a really bizarre physics project seemed like there was a chance for both real, you know, real humor, some good comedy, and good science, and a really, you know, spectacular kind of story. So we picked Wisconsin because we know it.
All right, well, let's turn to some of your work that has made it to the big screen. The Jurassic Park franchise. Now, there's, of course, you've come back to it this year, but I want to start at the beginning. This movie did pretty well, obviously. How do you approach taking something like that Michael Crichton novel that it was based on and adapting it for the screen?
Well, I had adapted a couple novels before. Shortly before I did Jurassic Park, I had adapted the two novels into the movie that became Carlito's Way, the Brian De Palma movie with Al Pacino. And so I knew my way around how to, you know, a general idea of how to turn a book into a movie. The thing of it is, the challenge with the Crichton book was there's, you know, there's 350 pages of really dense science in there. I mean, it's exquisitely researched. And there was a brilliant idea. Could we extract intact dinosaur DNA from fossilized mosquitoes? The answer in the movie is yeah, and the book in the movie was yes. And in a believable way that made everything else that happened seem real. So the challenge was, how do I get all that science and all those lengthy scientific monologues into a movie, which, you know, doesn't traditionally use either of those, a ton of science or lengthy monologues. So that was the big challenge. And that was solved bit by bit by condensing, and extracting all the things that were the gems that we knew we wanted to keep, finding the bridging material that would make it all work, and coming up with clever little devices like Mr. DNA, the animated movie within a movie that explains how it works. You have to think, how can I help express this visually in a way that's succinct and compelling? And so that's just work. That's the nose to the grindstone stuff of writing.
And you mentioned writing visually. When you're writing a movie for Steven Spielberg or Steven Soderbergh or Brian De Palma or whoever, how much of the vision, the visual side, do you lay out on the screenplay versus how much the director is going to take and bring it to life?
Well, I've always felt strongly that screenwriting is writing images. Of course, everyone thinks of dialogue, and of course the screenwriter is responsible for the dialogue. But you're also responsible for creating a visual template of the film. If you have a chase sequence, for example, you don't just write the cars barrel down the road and chase each other. You write a chase scene. What moments happen and what does it look like? And the big challenge of a screenwriter is, how do I make this appear to a reader? Like, so that you're reading a screenplay, which is an odd form anyway. How do I make these images and sounds appear in your head? You want a reader to experience the script at about the pace that you would experience the movie. So it should only take 90 minutes to 2 hours to read a script at the most. And how do I do that? How do I do that without it becoming bogged down in description? But I find if a writer doesn't write a visual sequence the way that they think it should go in the film, the way they think it should look and be presented, then they're abdicating their responsibility. The director will come in and reinterpret it anyway, but it's your job to get something down on the page first that they can, some choreography that everybody can then either dance with or change.
We are talking to David Koepp, a screenwriter, Jurassic Park, Mission Impossible, and more on his long list of screenplays. He is from Pewaukee originally. You've also delved into writing books, writing novels, Cold Storage and Aurora. How do you approach writing a novel after, you know, writing for the screen for so long?
That was a really good question. I started writing Cold Storage, I think, in maybe 2016. I was already in my mid-50s, or I was 53, I guess, and I'd been writing for 30 years as a screenwriter, and they're very different media. You know, the shorthand version is that books tend to be about what people think and feel, and movies tend to be about what they say and do. So you have very different tools available to you as a writer. And I'd thought for years that I should try writing a novel because it seems like a logical extension of writing and storytelling. And I was always a bit afraid of it because I'd never done it. And so I started this one and just sort of, you know, took a breath and jumped in the pool. And I was almost right away, I was sort of delirious with possibility because I was amazed by how many more tools I had. I could describe what people did or saw or, you know, events that happened, but I could also stop and talk for 2 pages about what a character was thinking or how, a memory they had of their childhood or, you know, the job they used to do in high school. And those diversions you just don't have in movies. Everything about a movie script is about concision. How can I reduce this? How can I express this in fewer words? How can I have 9 lines of dialogue instead of 13? And it's in a book, I mean, you can't wander off too far and bore the reader, but there is a lot more latitude. So I found that really fun. First of all, it was great to use a different set of tools in writing than I was used to.
Does the budget enter into it, where if you're writing for a movie, you think, okay, if I add 2 more settings, that's more budget. If I add these special effects, whatever. In the novel, it doesn't cost you anything to write a scene in space or whatever.
No, your limitations are only your imagination. So I tend to not I'm always thinking in terms of confinement and what is the container that's going to hold this story? Is it all in one location? Is it, you know, over 24 hours? Is it a limited number of characters? I get excited by the idea of limitations like that. I wasn't naturally prone to blowing up the books big.
The movie business has changed a lot since you've gotten into it. The industry, distribution, technology, list goes on and on. From your perspective, what have been the biggest changes?
I see it as in two areas. There were 2 eras that brought great change. There was the sort of advent of MBAs in the movie business in the 80s and certainly by the early 90s. It took it away. Movie studios used to be run by larger than life personalities. When I started at Universal in the early 90s, it was Lou Wasserman, who'd been there forever, with his lieutenant Sid Sheinberg. And the personalities of the moguls who ran the studios sort of dictated the personality of the studio. And everybody, all the executives who worked there were great movie lovers and had come up wanting to make movies. As more and more, as the companies got bigger and, you know, were bought up by large corporations and became more corporate, they were chasing the bigger hits more. And so the people who ran the studios started to be more people who had a business background and got MBAs. Movies were less important than maybe the deals and the potential for big returns because now they're corporate, but quite corporate, part of vertically integrated corporations. And so that changed things a little bit, and that quite a bit. And then the other big change is streamers that's happened over the last, you know, course of the last, 7-8 years. And that's just changed how people go to movies, how people consume movies, what kinds of movies get made, the volume of movies that get made. And that's been a massive change that I don't think we fully understand even yet.
As we wrap up, David, you've worked with some big name directors, as we mentioned. Is there a dream partnership that you have? Somebody, a director, or maybe an actor or something that you'd really like to write for that you haven't yet?
Gosh, that's a very good question. I mean, we all, you know, the great directors of our time, we pretty much know. I mean, I've gotten to work with a lot of them. Steven Spielberg, Brian De Palma, Steven Soderbergh, Ron Howard, it's Bob Zemeckis, a lot of really great directors. So I'd be kind of greedy if I said I wouldn't love to see what, you know, what Chris Nolan would want to work on, but he writes most of his own stuff. So I'll take what I got. If I could do another movie with each of those guys, I'd do it in a minute.
We'll leave it there. David, thank you so much for joining us again in Wisconsin.
My pleasure.
David Kep is an author and Hollywood screenwriter. He's worked on movies like Jurassic Park, Death Becomes Her, and Mission Impossible. He grew up in Pewaukee and went to school at UW-Madison. Hey, is there a character, a person from Wisconsin that went on to do something you think is interesting that you think there should be more coverage of, that you'd like to hear an interview about or with here on Wisconsin Today? Let us know. Give us that idea. Email wisconsintoday@wpr.org. That's wisconsintoday@wpr.org.